rides his pony down life's lane, searching for the why of all the pain he knows. It'll never be the same.
Good morning, Legs. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. We're on day 5 of Love Week. We'll be coming around to Love Week again, but this is the first full week of Punk Love, and it's been very good. And today we have a topic that we're calling I Choose We. And before we get started, we wanted to remind you that we have a free download of Seeds We Like, and that's in the show notes. It's also on our website under our blog, and so that's at legsandlizzie.com. And then we also have a new free download, that 6 tools that we use for our relationship, that came from one of the episodes this week. And we like to read our definition of punk when we talk about punk, just so that we're clear on what we mean by that. And the Legs and Lizzie definition of punk is unity, DIY, nonconformity, strength, speaking out against injustice, community, compassion, equality, and peace, and damn good music. And we did not play a song before we recorded today, but we already put 10 songs into a playlist in the show notes. There's also a Punk Love playlist, 10 songs, and we'll be adding to that. Might be, 10 songs, 9 of your songs, and then I threw one in, one in.
Yeah, but that was a good sneak in. Very good sneak
in. Actually, I don't know if I put that on or not.
Oh, we'll get it in there then. Yeah. It's not one you cannot forget.
So we thought we'd just check in first, and we had a little relationships kerfuffle last night over egg salad sandwich. And I don't even know if that's a word, kerfuffle.
Yeah, it is. Okay. It's a really good one to use. Bravo.
And I joked earlier that, you know, that'll be an indication we're not 100% on our vegan track. But
and it's funny you were calling it a chicken salad sandwich.
I was.
and what, I said, what was that?
Much of a,
kerfuffle it was.
Kerfuffle it was. Yeah. It was even calling the eggs the chicken, and we don't eat meat. And in my meditation this morning, I was thinking about this topic for today, I Choose We, and how funny it is that we can get into these little things about ourselves, our little insecurities and ego, I'm speaking for myself, and when you look at all of the things that are going on in the world and you start to focus outward instead, we just learned about Valerie Kaur yesterday and the work she's doing, speaking out for people that are persecuted minorities, this whole time that we're in of so much separation and hatred, all these hate crimes, and just thinking, you know, maybe that egg salad sandwich really isn't that important. Our relationship is for certain, but the focusing in on the minutiae of things, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, I agree. When you said in your meditation, you put it in that perspective. So everyone knows I had difficulty apologizing for my behavior last night. You know, it takes two, and I was, of course, part of it. But when Lizzie put that in perspective of, like, really overall something having to do with an egg salad sandwich, formerly a chicken salad sandwich that was never a chicken salad sandwich, you know, I realized I had to apologize, and I did. And she accepted my apology. I realized I did not react correctly and I should have handled it a different way. And so all I can do is learn from that and try not to repeat the past and do it again. And I guess that's what being in a relationship is learning from what works and what doesn't work, and then try not to do it again and come up with some ways of making sure it doesn't even happen. So that's what I got out of that.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you. And when we talked about our six love tools, we definitely said that these are things we're working on. And one of the biggest things for us is when we're overtired and we're in our third act. And so, you know, when we're overtired, it's just like anything. If you're trying to stop drinking, you know, they say halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And those are the times when you really need to be careful about picking up a drink. It's the same for being cautious with your words, being kind, being able to pause and say something that's not going to hurt the other person's feelings. And when you're tired, it's really challenging. And I was extremely hungry, making excuses for myself.
She was. But we were both hungry.
We were both hungry and we were tired. We worked hard that day. So thank you. We did some talking this morning. We have some ideas, and we love each other. And
we're not perfect. In other words, everybody listening, we're just like all of you out there. We have our ups and downs. We have our issues, but we love each other, and we ultimately want to make things work. We don't give up.
Thank you. So yesterday, I couldn't remember the name, and I was embarrassed because I have a podcast. It's called Pedro the Water Dog Saves the Planet Peace Podcast. And it's about peace. And I have a book series by the same name, minus the peace part. And I just wanted to kind of talk about concepts around peace. And a woman whose name I couldn't pull yesterday, we put it in the show notes for yesterday's show, though. Her name is Nikki Ganinder Kaur Singh, and she wrote the book Birth of the Khalsa and has given me permission to read the first chapter of the book for my peace podcast. And so yesterday when we talked about Valerie Kaur, she uses a lot of metaphor with birth, and like a lot, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
It's pretty much her whole theme of her TED Talk. And that you're going through this really painful transition to move through, really almost like death, moving through to the other side, pushing and breathing to get through this time. And she's using it for her Revolutionary Love Project. And when I was presenting that, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, here's this another Sikh woman, a professor, Nikki Ganinder Kaur Singh, in 2005 wrote the Birth of the Khalsa. Well, I would think it would be a big stretch to think that Valerie hadn't read, both as a feminist, as an attorney, as an educated woman,
exactly,
this book.
Probably.
Correct? And I'm sure that she's credited Nikki in some way and thanked her. But I will be narrating this on my podcast, and it's not to give a plug for the podcast, but I just did. It's a plug for my podcast coming soon.
Say what it is.
Yeah. But the introduction has, the first page of it has an explanation of the Khalsa, abbreviated, the importance of it. It's a big part of my life with my Kundalini yoga. And I think you'd really be interested in this.
I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
Go for it.
Just to give you, I'll read it. It's pretty short, and then we'll stop at this first paragraph. And the book, well, I think this first page gives you the gist of the book as well, so I will just read. So there's a quote at the beginning by Catherine Simpson, The Future of Memory. For there is no identity without memory, be it of a person, couple, family, neighborhood, community, tribe, people, nation, globe. The birth of the Khalsa, from the Arabic Khalis, meaning pure, by Guru Gobind Singh, is a pivotal event in the psyche and imagination of the Sikhs. I have to learn to say Sikh because I've pronounced it the wrong way for quite a long time, so forgive me if I revert. During the Baisakhi festivals of 1699, the Guru and his wife prepared Amrit, and five men from different castes sipped it from the same bowl. Their drink purified them of all mental defilements, ending centuries of hereditary oppressions of caste, class, and profession. The five were born into the egalitarian family of the Khalsa. Over time, Khalsa and Sikh have become synonymous terms, and even though only a minority of Sikhs are formally initiated into the Khalsa order, all Sikh men and women trace their personality, name, religious rites, and prayers, what they do, what they wear, how they identify themselves to this liberating Baisakhi of 1699.
Wow.
So that's the gist of the Khalsa. That Guru Gobind Singh, one of the 10 gurus, said everyone's equal, and including women.
Yeah.
And it was very, very, very huge. And then I think, if it's okay, I'll read this next paragraph. It's going to be more about the book and the feminist aspects of what she's about to do. But since I couldn't remember her name yesterday, I'm wondering if you'll indulge me.
Yeah, do it justice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lakes. So this next paragraph will tell you about the book. But the event has been recorded only by men, with the result that its total value is far from recovered, and in fact, the imbalanced memory has imposed a heavy burden on the life of half the Sikh community. How can its mnemonic efforts forge Sikh men into hyper-masculine subjects and Sikh women into passive and silent objects of centuries-old cultural burdens? Something is terribly out of joint. This study is my rememory of that moment from a female perspective, which recognizes and reproduces an alternative vision to the conventional androcentric understanding and application. To be sure, Guru Gobind Singh was a man of his times. Living in a patriarchal society, he might not even have been aware of all the liberating implications of his dramatic Baisakhi event. But he set them in motion, and his followers must keep this momentum going. I hope my rememory will inspire Sikhs to live out the emancipatory praxis birthed by their guru and open our global society to becoming more receptive of others. So while I was a little worried it was going to be too specific to the book subject and too feminist, and I would never feel that way other than this subject is punk love and not necessarily, you know, about women, related to yesterday, where we heard this TED talk from Valerie Kaur of this powerful woman telling us to live in revolutionary love, knowing what her culture is. It's right. Interesting, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. How she came to that concept, knowing mm-hmm. what, how she was brought up. And it was her grandfather that made her into the warrior she is.
Right.
Right, so it was a man that advised her to be the warrior she is today.
Beautiful.
Exactly.
And what this book, I've only read part of it, and I may, if she allows me, read the whole thing, narrate the whole thing, but I plan to just narrate the first chapter, is these images of the sword and the writing of the Khalsa. She takes the Khalsa and gives it a feminist perspective. And I think as we move towards wanting peace, laying down our guns for a peaceful world, you know, that power that we need to have that happen, it's needed. You know, how do we direct the power? It's really fascinating to me how we can be in such violence and yet have visions of peace, and it's very interesting. So thank you for letting me read.
You're
that.
Welcome.
So thank you. So the next part, I wanted to talk about the commons, and you and I may have talked about this a bit. Do you remember me talking much about the commons concept or anything?
A little bit, but I know you'll explain it to me. So, yeah, you'll fill me in. Sometimes okay. I have, you know, brain freezes.
Oh, no. I just couldn't remember how much I had talked about it with you. But I wanted to say, when I first learned about this, I'm kind of embarrassed to say, because I have a real estate background, and I feel like I've read, you know, a number of things. But I heard some millennials say, I was at a regenerative agriculture conference. It was an online one by PASA. It's Pennsylvania something something agriculture, sustainable agriculture. I don't have the full acronym. And these young people made a comment that, oh, and you know, the conservation is, I can't remember the word they used, but it wasn't good, you know. And I'd been walking a path in my business and in what I wanted to help happen with real estate, regenerative agriculture being one and conservation being another. I was really taken aback. And I thought, you know, what? You know, we're conserving the land. We're bringing back nature. We're restoring it. And when I explored it further, I found that the reason is because it's still a couple of people are conserving the land. There's still the landowner. Then there's this land trust that's managing it, but it's still taken out of the use in most cases of the public. Now, I said most, and I really haven't seen the statistics of how many conserved lands have public access. So maybe we can't say most. Let's just say many. I'm familiar with the Napa Land Trust, where they, several of their lands, you can, as a member of the public, attend a training and be able to go on to the conserved land.
Okay.
And obviously there's government lands that have been conserved that the public gets to use. But there's also many other lands where the landowner would receive an easement payment to take the land out of development. And they would get use of the land, or a number of people. They could still run cattle on it if it's a ranch. If it's working lands, they could still farm it if they're a farmer. But it's really not bringing the land to the people. So the commons, there's an organization that studies the commons, and I will let you know that in just a second, and I meant to paste it in here, and I will put it in the show notes. But it's an organization that studies the commons, and I've just pulled their definition, which I think is a good one and tells you a little bit about the history. And why I'm talking about the commons is there is a commons movement that basically, if I had to just, without reading this to you, say, oh, and this is probably the part that I've told you in the past. When the people that have made a lot of money from the internet were born, they made a decision to go down a path using technologies that had already been in existence, or when they were very young, were being developed. Mm-hmm. And they made a choice to study business or work in business and learn the skills of business to use these technologies that they didn't develop. And they've created great wealth from it, say Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. There's another human on the planet, maybe let's just say my mother, who decided to live a smaller footprint, work her job, raise her children, she decided she didn't want to do what they did, and she hasn't flown a jet into space using huge amounts of natural resources.
Don't get me going. Yep.
And so one of the ideas around the commons is that, you know, the Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk did not, you know, they didn't develop the internet. They were born and they're using resources that really belong to all of us, and that there should be some system, and we'll talk about the commons more in the future, and we'll bring more resources of people that have written and discussed it, because this wasn't intended to be a podcast on the commons, but related to love and I Choose We, that there should be a system where they are paying for these natural resources that they're using. And such a payment, if priced correctly, would discourage such blatant disregard for the resources. And would, you know, if I don't use those resources living a small footprint, I'm taking care of the community or the planet, you know, versus someone who's just really pillaging things. So that's one of the concepts, and that's very simplified explanation of part of it, but it really spoke to me, that explanation of it. And here's another one. This is what's on the webpage of this organization that I'm gonna, here we go. Is that it? Hang on, sorry. Yeah, sorry, I thought I could find the name of the website, but I will in a second. So the original meaning of the term commons comes from the way communities managed land that was held in common in medieval Europe. Along with this shared land, a clear set of rules developed by the community about how it was to be used. Over time, the term commons has taken on several meanings. Mostly generally, it can be used to refer to a broad set of resources, natural and cultural, that are shared by many people. Traditional examples of commons include forests, fisheries, or groundwater resources, but increasingly we see the term commons used for a broader set of domains, such as knowledge commons, digital commons, urban commons, health commons, cultural commons, etc. The study of governing shared resources is therefore not restricted to the original domain of natural resources, and the IASC, that's the organization, and the website, brings together scholars from all those different application domains to exchange experiences and solutions. What are commons? How to effectively govern the commons has been a long debate in academia. In 1968, biologist Garrett Hardin, 1915 to 2003, wrote a famous essay in the journal Science titled "The Tragedy of the Commons," arguing that when people share a resource, they will often overharvest it because it is in their individual interest to take as much from the resource as possible. Depletion of the commons could, according to Hardin, only be prevented via private property rights and government regulation. The term tragedy referred to the argument that people are not able to self-govern common resources. Many other scholars, however, criticize Hardin for not describing a common, but in fact describing a situation of unregulated free access use of resources. So private property rights are very always fought for. You know, it's something that really will stop a conversation regarding the commons, and in a political sense, really, you know, you think there's no way we could move beyond it, but there is a commons movement. And stranger things have happened. Women couldn't vote before, and now we can.
Yep.
Anything on that, sweetie? There's just a little bit more.
Yeah, there. All I will say is I've never, it's hard for me to fathom if you have, and I'm not going to use names, but I know specific incidences, especially where I mostly grew up, where there's large pieces of open space by choice. But there are individuals who had the wealth to buy it. And they do put the fences up. And then they get angry that normal people might want to just cross through their land to get to another piece, to go somewhere, like to find a stream or a lake or a particular tree. And they get angry about it. They don't want people to be telling them what to do with their land. They don't like, they're not, these people that are being very gentle on the land are not destroying the land, they're not hurting the land, it becomes territorial. And then fights ensue, you know, and I just don't know why we can't all just get along. And, you know, just because one person had the ability to make the money to buy this, hopefully they, I can't tell anybody what to do, but if they could try to have an open mind to allow people to enjoy things that they didn't have the money to purchase, but they love the land just as much. And can't there be some compromise instead of standoffs, you know, arguments, violence in some cases. So I think this is a really good path that people, at least scholars are looking at this, educated people to try to figure out a solution. They're, you know, from where my relatives are from, their actual land that they owned was taken away from them. And there's still issues about that now, and that happened back, I think, like in the 1500s, for example. There are still issues to this day. I just don't understand it. It just doesn't, I'm somewhat educated, doesn't seem logical to me. And there should be a better way to handle these things. So I'm glad somebody's looking at this.
Yeah. You brought up a lot of things. I mean, those same issues are why, you know, people can walk across the beach in front of multi-million dollar homes in Malibu, right? They are able to, at some point, we could research when that happened, but they decided that, you know, public access is important. And here in our backyard are the Sutter Buttes that used to be very open, and there it's all private owned except for a very small piece. There's a state park piece that's been owned by the state for 20 years and the park has never opened, and then a small conservation easement and more easements in the works, but it's slow. And the landowners near the state park stopped it, you know, in some cases at gunpoint because they didn't want people coming in. And so, you know, that's something that personally, you know, we're trying to work on.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough, like Lizzie said, we were fortunate to go on the state park land in a tour. They don't allow anybody just to willy-nilly go on that. And to be honest, I was taken aback that where the state park ends, there's a fence. And right over that fence is somebody that owns that land, but it's actually American Indian site that's old. There's rocks there that show that's where they were using stone to break down the corn for maize. You can see it clearly, but average people cannot go and look at that, or just observe it, or take a picture, or enjoy it. And there's beautiful trees and everything there. And the American Indians cannot go there and, you know, just be, you know, take in where their ancestors were. And I was just taken aback by that. That one experience has stuck with me, and it still to this day does. And it gets my feathers up that this is the way it is. And, you know, I could complain about it, or do something about it. So I guess that's what we're trying to do. We might not be able to legally do anything, but maybe speaking out about it and have other people hear about what we're talking about, they can invoke some change. That's what we're trying to do here, is invoke some change. It just takes one person to say, yeah, that is not right. I'm gonna go look into this and figure something out. But then another person says, I'm gonna do the same thing. Then you have a movement.
Right.
And that's what you're talking about.
There used to be a Save the Sutter Buttes organization, and now some of those people have gotten older. And the state park, you know, you can see it by appointment only, but an old barn blew down. And so I just don't think, you know, I think people, you know, a limited amount of people there would be great. And then the land back movements, I think that would be ideal, you know, getting that.
I'm not trying to bloviate, but that's, it really stuck with me. You know, it sort of stuck with me, the fact that we had to make an appointment to go on a guided tour, a state park land of like 20 people. And it was beautiful and it was wonderful and I felt really privileged to go. But that one bit where we walked over there and there had to be some negotiation for us to go over and physically go look at it, because it wasn't state park land, really got to me.
Yeah, well, it's this part, we can describe what it is. I will say that what got me interested in the whole thing, and I don't want to get into the details of things that I've done to try to move that forward, because I haven't accomplished, and it'll just sound like I'm trying to pat myself on the back when the things
you've
happened.
You've spent a lot
yet.
Of time.
I have.
You've spent a lot of time.
It's
in your blood.
Well, and I've had certain meetings, and I'm hoping that just having those gets people talking. There's the State Park Foundation, and I had a call with the Sutter Buttes Regional Land Trust director, and finding out about. But basically, when I became interested, was this like the hikes are $40. It's run by the Middle Mountain Group, and they're a wonderful organization. But this organization was specifically formed when the group was in disagreement of how, what should be conserved, how they should structure. And the landowners basically said, the hippies are in here too often. We're going to throw up fences, and we will allow, because some of the agreements, like one property was owned by a cell company, communications company. When they sold it, they mandated that there was public access. So there's some public access, and the owner of the property is lovely, and I'm not disparaging anyone necessarily involved, other than to say that a $40 hike is not accessible. It's something that I wouldn't do every day for $40, and a person, you know, with lower income or, you know, it's just not accessible. And so explored that, and they were like, oh, maybe you can join the land trust, right? I kind of got moved to, obviously I was of a personality and of a philosophy that would be better suited being over with the land trust, but they had parted ways for that reason. And we go on the hikes, and this was a special hike for it's not the Snow Goose Festival, it was the Swan Festival.
Correct.
And I was a small sponsor of that, and we went on that hike. But I was a little vocal when we were in there. But the piece of land that we're talking, we didn't even intend to talk about this, but I'm glad we are. It's this huge grinding stone area. So there's probably like 10 to 15 or more stones in one area. And then there's this flat rock that the sun kind of comes over this peak, and there's this rock in the middle of the field, and I don't know what the time of year would be. It's almost like a sundial type of thing with the peak. I mean, it's so obviously a sacred space that you can see where they would come, have a big gathering up there.
And there's a stream running.
There's a stream.
And everything. Yeah.
It's amazing. And then the property line between the state park property and a private property kind of cuts the grinding stone area in half. That should be Native American land, no question about it. And I think we'll just say it right here, that state park land should be granted to a group of tribes in the area, and that's who should have that land. And then a lot line adjustment should be made to incorporate that whole holy area, sacred area.
Since we're on it, both Lizzie and I are really spiritual people, but we're not hippies. But you know, we're just average people. And I felt something by being there. I could almost envision the Native American women there with their children running around, grinding the corn. You can see it. You can see where they've done this there, and really, unless the negotiation didn't take place while we were there with the landowner who happened to be down the road with the property, we would have not been allowed to have the gate open to go see it. It's like the old thing of having to peek over the big wall of the mansion.
Well, it was cattle guard.
Yeah, but that's
what
I'm saying.
State people didn't want to walk over it when the property owner was there.
So there had to be this negotiation.
Yeah.
And I was aghast at the whole thing. And it stuck with me. I don't think I've said much to you about it, but it stuck with me.
We talked about it afterwards.
Yeah, and it's the have and the have-nots. It's like, who decides this stuff? And why is state park land that should be public access gated up with guided tours? just doesn't make sense to me. So
yeah, thank you. Yeah. Great addition, talking about all of that locally and yeah. how it applies. So I think, and we're going to talk about I Choose We. We're going to read this last paragraph. And the website is iasc-commons.org, and it's the International Association for the Study of the Commons. There are all of these hate crimes and people that are in poverty and things that need to be corrected in our society. Like, let's move to a commons model peacefully to heal the planet versus more of a revolutionary situation where people have just had enough. And that sounds a little wild, but we know people know that that is a possibility. I'm just talking about when you oppress people for too long, and the lands, their private property, people take good care of their land, and there's a strong argument, but there could be a model where we're taking care of our land, but we're also taking care of the land together. And there are smart people working on that and figuring that out, and we don't know all the details of how it's going to work, but it sure makes a lot of sense.
We're just a sort of a messenger, sort of, you know, like a little beacon out there for people that hopefully will listen to this and say, and just, you know, a light bulb will go off. And that's part of the reason why we do this, is that we just hope that one person will hear what we have to say and start a movement, which is punk.
It is punk, and there's co-ops are also another form of commons. So just to finish this, since Hardin's essay about the tragedy, how people couldn't govern and they were exploiting the resources, an increasing awareness has emerged that tragedy is not the only possible outcome when people share a common resource, as there are many examples of long-lasting communities that have maintained their shared resources effectively without having to resort to market or governmental solutions. Since the early 1980s, an increasing number of anthropologists, sociologists, political scientists, ecologists, and many other scholars have been documenting examples of resources shared in common that have been managed sustainably for a long time without private property rights or governmental interventions. At the PASA conference, there was this young man from Scotland who described the history of Scotland and how their language didn't even have, like, there wasn't a word for saying, like, this is my land. Because basically there would be, you might have your home here, but everything was all together in a community type of situation, and probably similar to
Ireland.
The time when the Irish land was taken away, all of the,
That's a whole other episode.
But it would be interesting to talk about it in the future, because if we did an episode or a series, we could have a week on the commons. We could dive into more of it, because I would love to learn more of it. And I'd love to learn more about the history of Ireland, too.
And I'm no expert, but but we don't want to repeat what happened in the past there. And some of the things in this country we're doing could lead into what had happened there. It took them 30 years to figure it out. And we don't want to go through 30 years of what they went through. Mm-hmm. And so that's my fear. We're moving in closer and inching. And so hopefully with what we're saying and other people out there far more powerful than us, they're gonna start taking steps back. Take that finger off the trigger for a peaceful life.
So please, that people. leads us to, how would we get our frame of mind to think about the commons of sharing things? Having a group of elders or wise people, they don't necessarily have to be old in age, but they've been picked because of their wisdom and what they've shown to the community, that come together to make decisions for and how the resources are going to be shared. I wrote, for people to not overuse resources, we need to have a philosophy of the community or commons, and that commons includes each other and all of nature, and we are included in nature. So we talked on another episode, you can search it up, it's called I Choose We, where I had this meditation thought of this phrase that we'll definitely talk about more, we'll have it in our podcast and in some of our content, maybe it will become a book. And the phrase is, I choose we. And the first sentence that came to mind was, I could do anything, but I choose we. And then it goes through with a few other verbs that you can really transfer it into a lot. But this is a time when our choices need to look outward for each other. Gone are the days where we can spend to oblivion, build things to oblivion, wear everything, be in fast fashion with 52 seasons a year, whatever it is. And so, is it okay if I read some more of these?
Yeah, go for it.
So I could go anywhere, but I choose we. And that would kind of relate to eco-travel, like stay at home. You don't need to fly the jet all over the place. This is more about kindness, but I add, this is a new one. I could say anything, but I choose we. Probably because of you and I being in our relationship things recently. I could buy anything, but I choose we. I could make anything, but I choose we. I could use anything, but I choose we. I could sell anything, but I choose we. I could eat anything, but I choose we. That relates to being plant-based. And this is just to be romantic with you. I could love anyone, but I choose we.
I feel that.
But that's just the I choose we, hashtag I choose we. When we make our decisions, if we're looking outward towards nature, the planet, our communities, our families, we just get out of ourselves to be happier.
Right.
I think it could lead to a happier life.
It has to be a philosophical shift in your mindset to go from being so self-centered, but choosing the we, the universe, the people, the animals, everything around you, and just, you know, get out of your own head and be more open to what the world has to offer. And that's what it means. It's a really simple concept, but hard to actually do.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that's worthwhile is hard sometimes. And I think it's a beautiful concept that you came up with. Lizzie did this, everyone. She came up with this.
Yeah. No, it's just something simple. Yeah, and just something that we've been putting in our little social media hashtags because it's a nice phrase, I choose we. And thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
Thanks for letting me talk about Nikki Geninder Korsing's book and going over that. The information on the commons. I'm fascinated by the commons, and so maybe we can talk about that more.
And we'll
future.
Have more on the I Choose We concept, because mm-hmm. we do have a lot more to say about that. But we have a lot more podcasts coming up, episodes, so we're going to have time to do it.
Great. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
We usually hang around a little longer on our YouTube. If you ever want to check out our YouTube channel, and all our podcasts are there as well. And if you become a patron on Patreon, you could be our first one. So we are making a new video for Patreon this weekend. It should be a little humorous. We're looking forward to that. And we'll talk to you soon.
Have a great day, everyone.
Searching for the why of all the pain.
Thank you for listening to the Liggs and Lizzie Punk Farm Love Life podcast. Please subscribe to be notified of new episodes. It really helps us if you leave a review.
We'd love to have you join our Patreon family. When you join, for as little as $5 per month, will personally thank you on the podcast. You'll also receive special episodes and videos from us. Podcast music is by Lizzie's brother, who goes by Squint Todd and the Horse Thieves. See the show notes for links to other things we mentioned.
Be safe and happy until next time.
Do stuff, don't buy stuff.
Peace, punk, plants.
We don't need much, we just need each other.
There's a coyote bawling in the pouring rain. Sometimes he thinks he can feel his pain. Just tags along and listens while he sings his song. Love is all she knows. So on and on they go. Oh, strangers cry. Strangers cry.